Hello, good morning. Yes, I don't think I need to speak on the microphone. It's just a very brief welcome to you all, and my name is Ricard Matschkörber, and I'm here on behalf of the Essay Film Festival and also of the...
Yes.
I will talk here. Sorry, I thought my voice was loud enough to this. Just to give you a brief welcome to this day, the first part of our retrospective of the work of Günter Peter Strasek, which is a follow-up to the program we organized 2 years ago on the film commissioning and programming of the VDR in circa 1975, which was part of this television strand and essay film on television that we've been organizing since the start of the festival, actually. Also, this presentation of Günter Peter Strasek, which also came from the first presentation of the works of many of these early works at an excellent exhibition at the Ludwig Museum in Cologne, which presented for the first time many of these films, and also was the opportunity of publishing a quite incredible volume, two volumes now, on the work of Günter Peter Strasek, which has many materials about his work, many translations of articles, and also new publishing about the work of Strasek. And the Strasek is also part of the season dedicated to the films of Jean-Marie Straub and Daniel Huillier. There were very many different affinities between their works, and that we will probably also talk about today. And this is one of the reasons why two of the films are shown today. So just to tell you the program today, we'll focus on the early films. And then on Monday, we're going to have a whole day dedicated to the TV series, the film Emigration aus Nazi Deutschland, so film immigration from Nazi Germany, which we will present all the five episodes here and at the Goethe Institute, and it will be also an opportunity to discuss this work of Strasek. So today, we're going to start with a lecture and a presentation about Strasek at the DFFB and the early works, which will be delivered by Volker Pantenburg, who's also a friend of the festival and has been here 2 years ago also to introduce the series on the VDR. And after the lecture, we're going to have a 10-minute break, and then we're going to show the films. And then Volker and Julia Friedrich, who is also here, and thank you for coming, who has curated this exhibition on Strasek, will be in dialogue with Volker about the films. So thank you, Volker, and for being here, and I'll give you the word. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'll put
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. Hello. Really happy to be here. I want to thank Matthew, Michael, Janet, Laura, Ricardo, and all the other people involved in the festival. It's really great to see these films, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them in such good company, both in the company of you as the spectators, but also the films in company with those other films by Jean-Marie Straub and Daniel Huillier, to which I think there are a lot of connections, and there's a certain kind of kinship between Strasek and Straub-Huillier, both on a personal level, on a political level, but also on an aesthetic level. My presentation is going to be about 20 minutes, probably, just so you are prepared what to expect. And it's mostly about those years between 66 and 67. Let me start with a short preliminary remark. 2 years ago, at the 2017 edition of the Essay Film Festival, the first episode of Günter Peter Strascheks five-part TV program Film Immigration aus Nazi Deutschland was screened in this very auditorium on exactly this screen. Bernhard Dütsch, the commissioning editor of the series, who also happened to be one of the many close allies of Jean-Marie Straub and Daniel Huillier, generously shared his recollections of the 1970s at VDR at the screening. In the meantime, in December 2018, Dütsch has died. I'm very thankful that Janet McCabe gently pushed him to write about his time at the broadcasting station for the issue of Critical Studies in Television that has just been published. His essay is entitled The Three Musketeers, which, as he reveals in the text, and this is a small spoiler, but please read the text anyhow. The Three Musketeers was Daniel Huyer's flattering designation for the commissioning editors working there. However, to strike a more positive chord, 2018 was also the year when Günther Peter Straschek's film and TV work, entirely invisible for over four decades, reappeared and had a striking renaissance at Museum Ludwig in Cologne. Amongst the many exhibitions and events that took place to commemorate 1968, or should I say bury it for good in some cases, Film, Immigration, Politics was the most surprising and the most revealing. Two of the five films that we're going to watch, Zum Begriff des kritischen Kommunismus by Antonio Labriola, 1843 bis 1904, Made in 1970, and especially Ein Western für den SDS, from 1968, were presumed lost until very recently. Thanks to the enthusiasm, energy, and research of Julia Friedrich, curator at Museum Ludwig, and thanks to Karin Rausch, Straschek's wife, they have now entered into a second, or in the case of Western, a first life in pristine restorations and with English subtitles. Since this is supposed to be an introduction of about 15 to 20 minutes, and since Julia Friedrich is present to add her perspective, I will restrict myself to a brief contextualization of Straschek's years at Deutsche Film- und Fernsehakademie Berlin, DFFB, and the immediate aftermath. I will do this by offering three short glimpses at the years 1966, 1967, and 1968, maybe supplemented by an even shorter coda concerning the film on Labriola, made in 1970, and Straschek's collaboration and friendship with Straub-Huyer. So let's start with 1966. On September 17, 1966, after about 5 years of heated political debate, Deutsche Film- und Fernsehakademie Berlin is finally inaugurated. It is the first film school in West Germany. More than 800 aspiring filmmakers had handed in their applications in the preceding spring. Only 35 of them are accepted. These are images from a news broadcast covering the inauguration. Willy Brandt, mayor of West Berlin at the time, chancellor of West Germany a few years later, is giving an unctuous speech expressing his conviction that in the world of film, I quote, top performances result from artistic mastery, commercial efficiency, and technical perfection. He really seems to have the magic formula. In the audience, the TV camera spots some of the first year students, Harun Farocki and Daniel Schmidt, Skip Norman and Hilmar Mex, Helke Sander and Thomas Mitscherlich. Finally, we see Holger Mainz, who was to become one of Straschek's closest friends and collaborators. And as an aside, those of you who follow the Straub-Huyer retrospective know that their Moses and Aaron is dedicated to Mainz, an idea, as the correspondence between Straschek and the two reveal, that Straschek shared with Huyer and Straub to commemorate their friend, who had died after a hunger strike in prison as a member of Red Army faction in November 74. Straschek's time at the Academy was short. Depending on how you define it, it either lasted until May 3, 1967, when his student status, as well as that of six other students, was not renewed, and this time was therefore formally over. Or, at maximum, it lasted until February 21, 1968, when he was finally expelled for good. I will come back to some of the circumstances of these two reprehensions in a minute. Right from the start, conflicts between the students and the teachers and directors were evident. Straschek, to be sure, was not a person to shy away from dissent. This is an excerpt from the CV included in his DFFB application. Stating that he attended the Realgymnasium in Obersee, he adds, "Due to undisciplined behavior and insufficient results, I was expelled from school in 1960 and excluded from any further schooling at public high schools." On May 25, 1966, as one element in the week-long application process, Straschek shoots his 8-minute examination film. The exact nature of his assignment is not disclosed in the files, But the journal film, so these are a few stills from this examination film in 8mm. And the journal film promptly leaked the examination papers in its June 1966 issue. Judging by Straschek's film, which was found at DFFB and digitized again due to the persistence of Julia Friedrich, he chose the free subject described in this article. I quote, "The task was to observe people, objects or processes, to film them and to create relations by montage," end quote. With a sharp sense of detail and ellipses, Straschek and his cameraman document a number of everyday activities. And I'll just show them again. Works such as delivering coal, paving a street, making furniture, or welding a tram rail. Straschek's written exams, detailed answers to quite advanced questions about politics, culture, and film history, suggest that the unsatisfactory school results that I just mentioned must have been due to his dissatisfaction with school as a disciplinary apparatus, and in no way due to a lack of curiosity or knowledge. His answers reveal extensive knowledge of Tolstoy and Brecht, federal politics and literary forms, the cinema of Bresson, Godard or Ozu. Also, the admiration for Jean-Marie Straub and Daniel Huillet, which will later turn into a close friendship, is already documented in a thought about the acting of non-professionals in Not Reconciled, the one that you see here. I think I didn't translate that one, but he says something like, I judge their acting as wonderful or excellent. And so he really likes the way they work with those non-professional actors. Okay. One of the examiners, however, is not convinced. I quote this judgment on Straschek, no indication of any independent talent, seems to be an analyst. End quote. Notwithstanding, together with 34 other students, only three of which are women, Helke Sander, Irina Vryklyan, and Gerda Kramer, Straschek enters the DFFB in September 1966, unlike Rainer Werner Fassbinder, who unsuccessfully applied twice. So, 1967. The first major conflict between the students and the directors of the school emerged over the student films produced in the first year. Straschek was assigned to Czech filmmaker Jiří Weiss. Harun Farocki later recalled the atmosphere that seems to have been more repressive than in other classes. I quote, "The atmosphere was just like in the good old high schools of the 1950s. If you were just a little cheeky, you know that you won't get anywhere." And Farocki's fellow student Ulrich Knaut characterizes Weiss as, quote, "one of the most authoritarian guys that were around. Whoever got into a conflict with him was practically dumped." Hooray for Mrs. E, 16mm, 8 minutes, black and white, is Straschek's second film in Jiří Weiss's group. On the application form, dated January 18, 1967, the working title is given as Ausrichtung, which would translate roughly as training or orientation. The outline reads, a documentary film about Miss Ekberg, her friend Willy, and an escape from Austria, or of the possibility to live on 320 D-mark per month, Senate money, as a 33-year-old woman with five children without prostitution." End quote. However, the term documentary film does not really grasp what Straschek is after. When he submits the finished script at the beginning of March, which he hopes to shoot by the end of the month, he describes his intention in more detail. "My concern was to carve out structures of the film essay. If I'm not mistaken, the term cinematic essay was coined by Hans Richter in the 1920s, and to maintain a fundamentally fragmentary character. I did not want to provide a social reportage or a personal portrait of Mrs. E. Rather, by using image and sound, or more precisely their relations, I tried to suggest contexts." The essayistic form, for whose literary models like Robert Musil, Straschek had already expressed his admiration in the written application, is present in Hooray for Mrs. E, in the ruptures and gaps, between sound and image, between the individual and society. Among the three or four voices that we get to hear, Mrs. E's is quite obviously the one that Strašek sides with and advocates. There is a lot to say about the relations between documentary and fiction, between sound and image, but I want to point to the meticulous camera work. In this film, Strašek works with Gary Shum, who left DFFB soon after, made himself a name with the famous TV Gallery, a project developed with VDR editor Wiebke von Bonin, and committed suicide in 1973. Strašek, impressed by the films of Jean-Marie Straub and Daniel Huyer, must have had a very precise concept for the image. Otherwise, it would be difficult to explain that all three of his short films, in spite of three different cameramen, bear strong similarities in composition. In Hooray for Mrs. E, there's the shift between the detail, observations in the apartment, the children scribbling a book full of obscene drawings, the gestures on the dining table, the tight red bunk beds, and rigidly composed settings, and the precise panning movements and travelings that define the spatial and institutional context. In this back and forth, the film gauges the span between individual, biography and sociological context, between the contingency of the real and the controlled use of composition. It is also worth noting that many of the scenes that seem improvised have been scrupulously scripted by Strašek. For instance, a boxing fight between two of the boys, the fruit vendor at the market, or even the information given by the employees of the institutions. Strašek finishes Hurrah für Frau E. on time in April 1967, but the film is not accepted, under the pretext that its quality does not meet the expectations of DFFB. Strašek and others are told that their status as students is not extended. There was reason to suspect that the ones whose films are deemed insufficient were exactly those who were politically active. A massive protest ensued, and the students succeeded to have that decision suspended. And this is just one page of the, 20 or 30 page documentation that the students put together, where they tried to make an argument that these were decisions that were by no means based on aesthetic judgments, but that were clearly driven by political concerns. And this is the demands that they then have. Like, these facts force us to have the following demands. They want the examinations to be annulled. They want the director to step back, and they want all kinds of different changes in the structure of the academy. Okay, 1968. After the uproar around their first year films, Strašek, Farocki, and the other expelled students were given one more chance. Even if they were not formally readmitted as students, they were allowed to make one more film to prove that they did have some talent after all. To understand the ensuing escalation at DFFB, it is important to remember that the events of June 2, 1967 had the immediate effect of radicalizing many students. The killing of Benno Ohnesorg, one of the student protesters against the visit of the Persian Shah in Berlin by a policeman, and the massive police violence at the demonstrations led many formerly observant students to engage directly in political disputes. About Holger Mainz, close friend and cameraman of Ein Western, Strašek later wrote that he was one of those who, I quote, politicized themselves like a slingshot. Between June 1967 and February 68, countless forms of political activity of the students and the APO, Außerparlamentarische Opposition, were invented, most notably the Vietnam Tribunal and acts of sabotage against the Springer tabloid press. At DFFB, this meant that camera equipment and sound recorders were immediately integrated into the political activities. The making of a Molotov cocktail, so that's a film title, a 3-minute tutorial culminating in a shot of the Springer headquarters in Berlin, is maybe the most blatant example of these cinetracts that were really meant to stir up and provoke political action. In November 1967, Strašek starts to prepare his film Aufrisse, which will eventually have the title A Western for the SDS. Joachim von Mengershausen, later commissioning editor at WDR Department Fernsehspiel, supervises the film as a DFFB lecturer. In December, the shooting takes place. Once more, I have to praise the activities of Julia Friedrich and Museum König, who not only published a great catalogue accompanying the exhibition, but also a second extensive book containing not only a detailed analysis of this film by Stefan Ripplinger, but also the contents of a big folder with Strašek's working documents. And it's really incredible to see all the work that went into this film that you're going to watch in a bit. In the registration note preserved at the DFFB archives, the film is described as an, I quote, agitational Western about the sexual difficulties of Miss A, about the insight into some connections by Miss B, thanks to some students and members of the SDS, about the political activity of Miss C, end quote. The SDS, the leading political force of the student movement in Berlin, is explicitly represented by one of its leaders, Christian Semmler, who in one sequence holds a speech about the political character of the breach of the public's peace in a cramped lecture hall, and at the end, in the coda of the film, he reappears to lecture Miss C on her current situation. Why this film should be a Western is harder to say, and maybe you have thoughts on this after you've seen it. The film consists of three short vignettes, each of them introduced by an extensive quote by Cesare Pavese, another link to Straub-Huillet. The three sequences correspond to one another, showing the young women in comparable situations, both privately and at work. One could call the film a Brechtian Lehrstück of emancipation if Strašek were not extremely skeptical of the concept of emancipation itself. Strašek himself has characterized the film as a film essay adapting a single sentence of Mao Zedong. And this is the sentence: only in the process of socialist transformation of society as a whole, a real equality of men and women can be reached. This sentence is featured in the film, and it is one of the few sentences that are spoken by a woman in the canteen conversation with other women. Otherwise, in A Western for SDS, men are the ones who talk, and they speak exclusively from the paternalistic position of power. Western was finished at the beginning of 1968, but it had the fate of immediately disappearing into the invisible. Until very recently, no one except the people who involved in the production had ever seen the finished work. The company Klöckner had filed a criminal complaint because during the filming, and you're going to see this, leaflets had been distributed that called for the recognition of the GDR and announced a political rally of the APO. The directors of the DFFB took this as a final breach of trust and reacted with Strašek's definitive reprehension. The working copy of the film was confiscated and, according to the directors, went missing. However, the print made another mythical appearance in November 68. After a number of further escalations during 1968, including the renaming of the DFFB into Sieger Werthoff Academy in May, this is one of the photos, Wolfgang Petersen on the left, one of the first-year students for Rocky with the sunglasses, Holger Mainz next to him. So after this occupation, things kind of escalated quite quickly. And in November, when one of the students looked into a cupboard, the print was lying there, but after turmoil went definitely missing. All 18 students that were involved into this sit-in of the director's office were expelled. The film remained unseen to the public until spring 2018. Coming to an end, I want to give a longer quote by Carlos Bustamante that sheds some light on the working process. Bustamante, DFFB student of the second year, assisted Holger Mainz on Ein Western für den SDS. 2 years later, he was the DOP in La Briola. And these are 2 photos from the shooting of La Briola with Strašek, Johannes Behringer, the one with the mustache, and Farocki, like always, with the Godardian sunglasses. And Bustamante also filmed large parts of Film Immigration that are going to be screened on Monday. So this is the quote. Our shooting of Aufrisse seemed like a necessary break in the never-ending dialogue between Quixote and Sancho Panza. Holger Mainz, and Strašek did not talk to each other much during the filming. What had to be done had been worked out, defined, and rehearsed long before. Together, we unpacked the equipment, and after we had set up a pair of Colatron lights and the camera, there was a sudden silence. Holger stood behind the camera and very carefully studied the space through the viewfinder. He took his time, and at some point, he started moving objects back and forth by inches. First, the big things like tables and chairs, then the medium-sized ones like a table lamp and the record player, and finally, glasses, pencils, papers, etc. I was surprised when he made his hands move through the air above the objects like a magician or enchanted dancer. He moved a Colatron lamp forward or to the side, looked through the camera, pushed a few inches over the desk, observed the shadows of the actors during their movements. His diligence and accuracy in composing an image had been unknown to me until then. It surprised me to find out how many thoughts, reflections, decisions can be hidden in images. Holger's way of working opened my eyes to the works of Ozu, Bresson, and Straub, amongst others. In concluding, I want to try to sum up a few aspects that strike me as remarkable in these 3 films, 2 of which are early student films, even if they look remarkably accomplished and audacious. First, in all 3 films, Strašek rigorously puts female protagonists in the center. He does so from a different angle than, for instance, fellow student and early feminist filmmaker Helge Sander did. For Strašek, the position of women is not an issue apart, but one crucial factor in a larger concept of socialist equality. In focusing on the woman's role at a remarkably early moment, he points to one of the severe blind spots of the masculinist bias of the student movement in Germany. Second, the 3 films, especially Western, are radical in their camera work, but also in their juxtaposition of image and sound. In Western, there are long passages, including the first 6 minutes, without any sound at all, and I also say that so that you know that it's not a technical bug, it's a feature in this case. Dialogue is sparse. The longest stretch of speech is the reading of a long passage by Antonio Gramsci. More than any of the other students, Strašek was reluctant to resort to political slogans. The films and their extensive documentations attest to a real effort at coming up with a radical aesthetics to intervene in the political situation. Third and last remark. As I said, it is easy to forget that 2 of the short films are student films. I am convinced that they will stand the severe test to be in a program side by side with Straub-Huillet's work, to which there are many affinities. To me, it is above all Strašek's sense of independence, his loyalty to a socialist project, and reservations about the fashionable slogans which creates a strong bond between Strašek and Straub-Huillet. After his definitive reprehension in February 1968, Strašek leaves Berlin and goes to Frankfurt to establish the project group Schülerfilm, together with Holger Mainz. Working with school children in the same way that others did with apprentices or factory workers was in line with the concept of the so-called Zielgruppenfilme, target films or target-driven films. One possible reaction to this class fixation was to stop talking on behalf of others and go to the schools, factories, or newly built children's shops to link the practical work directly to the political work. Not films about, or no longer films about, but with those who were involved in concrete connections and had to suffer from authoritarian oppression. In retrospect, in this wonderful issue of Filmkritik with Strašek on the cover, Strašek looks back at his time at DFFB with some amusement. A quote, I don't know. Yeah. My semesters at the DFFB remind me of Die Lümmel von der Ersten Bank, with me in the role of Pepe, his teacher's fright. At any rate, the whole rigmarole was for me less a coming to consciousness than the belated climax of a carefree youth that was now drawing to a close, a last chance to sow my wild oats. A piece of cinema that had nothing to do with film. And I'd like to end with one final quotation, which once more points to the agreement between Straub, Huyer and Strašek concerning the relation between art and politics. And I think it's also interesting because it's kind of it's meant, or it's addressed to us as, I don't know, intellectuals maybe, and he's very skeptical about this. So I share Jean-Marie Straub's and Daniel Huyer's opinion that should a revolutionary situation materialize in Western Europe, radical leftist intellectuals would, for reasons of security, have to be taken into custody for a month or two, for the sake of success. These radical leftist intellectuals are a risk because they're extremely unpractical and try to make up for it by doing nothing but passing resolutions and theorizing every which way. They can and ought to be put to cautious use after the victory, but should be put out of harm's way during the armed conflict. They can't hold a rifle, haven't the foggiest notion of technology, and lack all practical experience. They would just stand around or write pamphlets. A glance at the history of the socialist movement in various countries shows that there's nothing monstrous about this suggestion. Okay, thank you for your patience.